Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, coming at you live at the new time of 11 a.m. local New Zealand time till 1 p.m. because they've just had daylight savings in the United States, and it will roll back eventually to the 10 a.m. till midday time slot when New Zealand, the great delayers that we are, eventually give up daylight savings towards the end of this month or the next. I think we passed some kind of a law saying, look, I want to have barbecues for an extra month out in the sun. Okay, let's pass a law for it. And they did. Love this country. My very special guest is Kevin Moore. Kevin, I don't know nothing about you, so let's start with you introducing yourself so that both myself and the audience will be more familiar.
Well, I was born in England, in a place called Southampton on the south coast in 1950. Grew up in post-war Britain, so I actually looked at bomb sites as a child. So there was actually food rationing when I was born, and it didn't come off until 1954. My parents were working class, so I was very fortunate in that the system during the 1960s actually helped people like me, and I ended up with a university degree, an honours degree in chemistry, specialising in the structure of matter and industrial technology. And I've also got a postgraduate diploma in industrial technology. So with that background, I've worked in fertiliser works, tanneries, I've been technical sales representative, I've been an environmental consultant. But I've had the rug pulled from underneath me, basically, because with the globalisation, most Western societies don't have much in the way of manufacturing these days. It's all about basically drilling for oil, and if you're not into that game, there's not much else, to be quite honest. And I think, you know, we're all familiar with that story of pretty well all manufacturing going to China or other East Asian countries. So that's basically me. I've got an honours degree in chemistry. I do actually have some credibility when it comes to chemistry and physics. You know, I'm pretty good at that sort of stuff. You don't get an honours degree in chemistry if you can't work out a bit of basic maths. So my maths is pretty good. I've also studied geology. But what I found interesting throughout the 1980s and 90s was the structure of society and economics. And I became very interested in this aspect. I'd done a bit of basic economics at university and became more and more interested in this whole structure of the economic system because back in 1972, there had been the Limits to Growth agenda, the Meadows Group, and a lot of movement towards what we might call sane society based on conservation of resources and care for the environment. Well, basically, that all got crushed through the Reagan and Thatcher years. In New Zealand, we had Roger Douglas and what I call basically saboteurs, a free-for-all. Basically, loot the environment as quickly as you can, make heaps of money, Ponzi schemes, you name it. And so when it came to 1999, I was getting very, very concerned about what was happening. I wrote a book, and it was called Burn, Baby, Burn. And effectively, what I was saying is, well, we need to address these issues. Nothing's got any better since the 1970s. In fact, pretty well everything had got worse. Well, no New Zealand publisher would have a bar of it, not interested. It ended up being published in Taiwan under private sponsorship. But I was talking then about resource depletion, global warming, environmental degradation in general, the attack which was being made on community, on society by corporations. Well, that was not a wonderful success in terms of what I did it for, because I did this, not to make money, but in order to open up the dialogue, in order to get some constructive activity going within central government and local government. Well, we just got the nonsense for the next decade. I wrote another book called The Thinking Person's Guide to Surviving the Future in 2006 and updated that book. And I also wrote another book, 10 Things Everyone Ought to Know. Well, people just don't want to know. It's quite interesting, you know, this whole culture of denial, which your leading song basically emphasized. We, you know, who's awake? Most people are not awake, don't want to know, not interested.
The Western world has a bigger culture of denial than Egypt.
Oh, totally, yes. denial, totally. So this is the book I would say that everybody who can get access to it needs to read. Now, I called it The Easy Way because most people are going to learn the hard way. They won't read the book. They won't be like, oh, you're too gloomy. That will never happen. You name it. Every excuse you can think of as to why they should not become informed. I've sold a couple of hundred copies of that book, mostly around Taranaki, which, for the sake of people in the rest of the world may not know, that is in North Island of New Zealand. It's the bit that sticks out towards the west. It's got a fairly low population and normally reasonably good rainfall, which is why I moved here from Auckland, because I had to escape the madness. I was in Auckland. I ended up trapped there. Couldn't get out for a long time. Sold my house at below market value just to get out. And I did that in 2006. And for the last 7 years, I have been what we call prepping in America, preparing for the meltdown, which I know is coming. So that's basically who I am and what I've been up to. Take it to you.
All right. Well, we talk about environmental degradation all the time, and in my opinion, there's two types of environmentalists. The ones who actually care about the whole holistic idea of the environment and the human condition, and those who know nothing about the environment and are simply enacting incredibly hardcore socialism policies in order to control and enslave everybody through taxation. And this is the split I see in the environmental movement. Those who see humanity as the solution to the problem, and those who see humanity as the problem in and of itself.
I just need to interrupt you because there's the green mob who want to push greenwash, right? So they provide corporate-based solutions to these problems, which are not solutions at all. I prepared a few graphics, so I'd just like to sort of stick that one on the screen. We have got this thing called industrial civilization, and it is held up by a number of pillars. I've done it like a sort of a temple because a lot of people worship the markets, etc. So we've got this temple, and what are we doing? Well, industrial civilization is itself destroying everything that it needs in order to exist. So even if environmentalists did nothing, this system is going to crash. Yeah. So it's a very interesting situation. And you say, well, what are these pillars? And, well, as humans, we need these things. We need clean air. We need clean water. We need nutritious food, we need a suitable temperature, and we need biodiversity. And what does this industrial system do? Well, basically, it attacks all of those things. So without a stable environment, without biodiversity, without clean water, human life is basically going to be destroyed. But we've got other things like ocean pH, we've got sucking water out of the Ogallala aquifer. I mean, we're using water that's thousands of years old, faster than it's being replenished. So everywhere you look, this whole system is attacking everything that makes life possible and makes itself possible.
It's what I found really funny is it takes 4 litres of pure water to make a 1 litre water bottle that they sell to people, and then they give people municipal fluoridated water in order to do that. They're just nuts.
We actually managed to get fluoride out of the water in New Plymouth. It was a big battle, and what was really interesting, the council took no notice of any of the scientific evidence, basically, and it just swung down to one person voting in favour of taking the fluoride out because she was concerned about babies having fluoridated water in bottled milk, right, making up the milk powder, and she was a bit concerned that that may not be good for them. Otherwise,
that might have been the first time in history where somebody went, oh, please think of the children, where it actually wound up resolving to something good.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, this whole system is destroying life on Earth. Is biodiversity. Now, you see different numbers quoted between 200 and maybe more. But anyway, say 20 to 200 species a day being exterminated. But these are like frogs, they're amphibians, they're, you know, rare plants. So nobody takes too much notice. But now we're looking at elephants being exterminated. I don't know if you're aware of this. You know, the ivory trade, it's basically, they think, oh, you know, orangutans, about 15,000 orangutans left in the world. In Indonesia, I think it's 180 million people. So, you know, what chance do 15,000 orangutans stand against 180 million people?
Well, it depends whether or not the orangutans are gun owners, which they're not.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is the big one. I mean, there are a whole lot of factors which are going to bring us down, bring us to our knees. And the one that really is most important from my perspective is the CO2. Now, this is a taboo subject, and it's interesting you're saying, no taboo subjects. Well, this is taboo as far as government and council and corporations is concerned. You cannot talk about CO2 levels. But if we look historically, it's been about 280, or it was, sorry, 280 prior to the Industrial Revolution. And once Britain started to industrialize, they were digging coal out of the ground. Coal is a form of carbon which nature put in the ground. Basically, that putting that carbon underground stabilized the climate, made it suitable for humans. So what are we doing? Well, we've for the last 200 years, been digging up the coal and burning it. And then, of course, from about the early 1840s onwards, there was mass consumption of oil. Starting off with just a few barrels, then we get into the, you know, the hundreds of barrels, thousands of barrels, millions of barrels. Well, right now we're burning about 84, 85 million barrels of oil a day. 30 billion barrels a year. So this is going up in smoke, adding to the CO2 problem. We're burning natural gas. Any activity in an industrial society is dependent on energy. Without energy, nothing happens. So we're doing this. So we're here now. We're very, very close to 400 parts per million. Now, a lot of people say anything above 350 is not safe because we're going to be triggering positive feedbacks. So that's the big one. And where is that going to lead us? Well, the term that is now being discussed amongst the people who are awake is NTE, near-term extinction. Sometime between 2040 and 2080. Now, I'm a parent, and my son and my daughter have both got children, so I'm a grandparent. Well, this kind of time frame basically means an uninhabitable Earth before their natural lives, you know, come to an end. This is frightening. This is the one issue which should be tackled by everybody. And most people don't want to go. No, government's not interested. Council's not interested. It's scary, Vince. Well, and anybody else is.
Are you joking? Are you saying that governments and the mainstream media and all these mainstream protest organizations aren't focused on carbon taxes and climate change and everything like that? We've already passed carbon taxes in New Zealand. They passed carbon taxes in Australia. Obama's going to force carbon taxation in America as well. What are you talking about?
Vince, carbon taxes is just a financial scam, right? It's nothing to do with dealing with the problem. All that carbon taxes do is allow money lenders and corporations to profit from the degradation of the planet, right? I mean, carbon taxes do not alter this. This graph continues on up and will do so as long as we keep burning fossil fuels.
But of course, if you take it back, if you take it way back, I think it was back in the, I think, what was it, the 1700s or 1600s? Had a medieval warm period, was far higher temperatures than we did today, didn't they?
That's the great myth that everybody wants to believe. Because that way, and this is all put out by Mobil, Exxon, they put millions of dollars into climate change denial. They keep feeding all this stuff about medieval. Well, there's a very recent report. We are now, the Earth is hotter than it has ever been since the dawn of humanity. Right? Mm-hmm. There was a warmish period, but from about 1400, the Earth is cooling off. Now, in the 1700s, London froze over. People were actually ice skating on the Thames. And there was a great fear that we were
headed. The little ice age.
Into an ice age. Through the 1950s and 60s, there was a lot of concern that we were headed into a mini ice age. The temperature was actually dropping. Now, I lived through the winter of 1963 in Britain, and the temperature was below zero for 3 months. Ice and snow, and this is in Southampton, right? Well, since then, it's gone the other way. So, we're heating the Earth faster than ever has happened before. And this is just coming back to what I was saying about my study of chemistry, because the CO2 absorbs radiation and re-radiates it downwards towards the Earth. So it's a greenhouse gas. It's trapping heat. And so the Earth is warming up. Hence, well, look, temperatures in Australia this year, hottest ever. They had the highest ever average temperature of 40.3 degrees Celsius, maximum temperature. Now New Zealand, the worst drought in history.
All right, hold on, Kevin. We're coming to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Moore on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's friggin' gorgeous down here, and the economy's going well because it's Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Kevin Moore. Kevin, welcome back. Now, we got interrupted by a break earlier. What were you saying?
Well, look, here's the graph, basically. The temperature of the Earth, and this is only just roughly drawn. It's just a guide. It's not, you know, it's not designed to be scientifically accurate. But basically, we had an ice age. The temperature of the Earth dropped a bit, right? So you then had much of Britain covered in ice. Ice shield came down over Canada, much of the northern United States. And then the temperature came up again. Now, what's really important, all these cycles in the past were due to the Earth's orbit. Now, the Earth goes around the sun, but it's not a circular orbit. It's elliptical. And that ellipse moves slowly around, and the Earth wobbles. And the effect of this, plus volcanic activity, is that the temperature of the Earth has gone up and down in the past quite considerably. But with this CO2 thing, now, well, it depends who you talk to. There has been general discussion of a 2-degree rise in temperature by the end of the century. But, you know, the 2 then becomes 4, and the 4 then becomes 6. Well, if we are actually headed for a 6-degree rise by perhaps the middle of this century, that makes most of the Earth uninhabitable. Now, 6 degrees sounds fine. You think, oh, yeah, that's balmy, yeah, we'll worry about all that, you know. It's 20 degrees in New Zealand, so that makes it 26. But that's not what happens. What happens is most of the heating takes place around the Arctic. So we're looking at an ice-free Arctic region. That completely messes up the climate system. And this has already been happening. Wild swings in temperature, and Britain's been suffering. You know, first it was a drought, then it was torrential rain, high winds, then freezing conditions. And then, you know, a few days later, it's belting hot, and Australia, New Zealand. And what's really big in America, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, there's been a long-standing drought in the United States, particularly the central states, over a year now, of very, very low rainfall. Now, I was kind of isolated on a lot of this stuff until I met other people via the internet. And the big thing for me was when I got in contact, I'm just grabbing a poster here, of a guy called Guy McPherson. He's an American. Now, he's well known in the alternative community because he left his job as a professor because he could see where things were going, and he's devoted his time and energy to raising awareness of these climate and environmental issues. And I actually got him to come to New Zealand. He stayed with me, and it was great for me for 3 days to have somebody that was actually on the same wavelength, sane, knew what was going on. And he did a tour of New Zealand and even appeared on national radio. but it made not one iota of difference to anything because the government and the corporations are in control and they're not going to have that message because it interrupts the money flow. So anyway, so that's where we're headed. Unless we do something drastically very soon, the planet's going to overheat within decades. So I can't give you a time frame, but 2012 was the greatest meltdown of the Arctic region in all of history. We lost 600,000 square kilometers of ice. So people are talking about ice-free Arctic in the summer, not in the winter, of course, by about 2017. So, and that kicks in positive feedback. So you've got all the methane that's in the permafrost, the CO2, all that stuff basically triggering greater warming.
So yeah, we have reports by Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org that all the geoengineering chemtrail spraying that's going on is causing global dimming now. And there's also another feedback loop that he's now discovered where the methane deposits in the southern hemisphere and northern hemisphere are now starting to be released. And as the methane goes through the water, it actually raises or it lowers the pH and makes it more acidic and kills off all the animal and fish life and what have you.
No, that's not quite correct. Methane is being released from seabeds. In fact, last year in Russia in the summer, there are massive bubbles coming up. I mean, some of them were kilometres across. Methane actually is chemically neutral. It doesn't lower the pH, but what it does, it gets into the atmosphere and increases the global warming, but then it gets oxidised naturally to CO2, and CO2 does depress the pH. So we're attacking the corals and the plankton, which make life possible in the oceans by lowering the pH. They won't be able to form shells. And again, this is chemistry. See, the whole world is actually a huge geochemical system and physical. And we're attacking the basic chemistry which makes life possible on Earth. And that's scary. And of course, most people have got no idea because they're not chemists. And it's not their fault. That's not a judgment on them. But the point is the people that should be doing something about this don't listen to the chemists. They don't listen to the physicists. They don't listen to the mathematicians. The only people they listen to are basically economists. So everything is about the economy. And we just get this rammed down our throats constantly. As far as I'm concerned, there are actually only two issues that really matter for most people, and nobody other than this very small group of people who are awake are even aware of them. The first issue is, how do we prevent abrupt climate change? In other words, the temperature going so hot that the Earth becomes uninhabitable. And how do we prevent mass starvation? Because the industrial food system is going to collapse. And I can't tell you when, but sometime over the next decade or so, we're going to have shrinking food supplies. Now, just think, referring to the drought in New Zealand, for example. Now talking about, we're not going to get the milk production that we thought we were going to have. Then we're going to slaughter a whole lot of animals. Then we're not going to have, the animals to produce milk. So if the grass does grow, you look at what's happening in America, it is dire. They're looking at a situation worse than the great Dust Bowl of the 1930s. They're not there yet, but that's where they're headed. And the latest forecast that I've read says that the drought in the US is set to intensify, not ease. So it's food for thought. So those are the two issues. As far as I'm concerned, we need to stop pouring CO2 into the atmosphere. We need to, stabilize the climate. It may actually already be
Kevin,
too late.
Hold on a second here. Can you name me a single human activity that doesn't produce CO2?
Let's just get this clarified. There's produce CO2 by breathing, and there's extract CO2 from out of the ground and put it into the atmosphere. Now, normal living doesn't actually increase the CO2 level. To go back to my previous graph, the CO2 level was about 280 for centuries. Didn't change. And there were 800 million, 1,000 billion people living on the Earth, all breathing and doing stuff, and not significantly changing the CO2 level.
Does solar output at all change CO2 release levels or anything?
No. This is another red herring. The change in the value of the solar output is minuscule. It goes from like 1366 to 1367. It's microscopic in terms of the whole big story. But you see, the global corporations don't want you to know this. They don't want you to make the connection with burning fossil fuels, with the lifestyle. Because once people en masse understand that, then there's big trouble for global corporations and moneylenders. Well, there's big trouble anyway, but it's a self-defeating system. But it's all about total short-term thinking. Just keep this Ponzi scheme going as long as possible. So, look, you can take that or not, but I'd like you to just think about it 5 years from now and say, oh, bloody hell, that guy Kevin Moore, you know, what he said, because everything that I wrote 10 or 11 years ago in that book is now happening. You know, we are burning up the planet. And in China, of course, they've gone completely mad and they're killing themselves with pollution in order to produce stuff. So this is not a judgment on society, but it's just simply a fact. Most people are scientifically illiterate. They don't have degrees in chemistry or physics. Not their fault. That's just the way it is. So I don't blame ordinary people for that fact that they don't understand chemistry. It's not their fault. But they're also financially literate. The vast majority of people haven't got a clue how the money system works. I mean, my bone of contention is governments and central government and local government, because those people should be dealing with this stuff, and they are not. Now, I've spent a decade doing submissions to council. Last submission process, I put in 20% of the material for the submissions. Nearly 400 pages, and they take absolutely no notice of anything anybody says and just carry on with the insane agenda of getting communities into debt and burning fossil fuels.
So, you know, I'd say, what do you expect when you're giving something as a submission? I mean, what does that say?
Oh, yes. Now, I mean,
I'm submitting. Yes, oh, powerful, godly government. Oh, yes, oh, a powerful, godly government. I submit.
Yes. These people are basically fascists. Oh, you can't say that. Yes, you are. You're fascist. Because most people don't understand what fascism is.
Now, the corporations control the government.
Totally. And moneylenders and corporations. And we've got these lackeys. And I've got a diagram a bit later on in my series here. But that's the situation. So anyway, coming back to it. So but, you know, there were some visionaries. And you read Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, 1931. I mean, we're talking 80 years ago. That guy was onto it. The only thing he didn't realize was resource depletion and environmental decay. So he's had helicopters flying around. But in terms of genetic engineering, this whole society of alphas at the top, everything is geared to the pleasure-seeking alphas, and you've got the betas, and they're happy that they're betas, because it would be worse to be a gamma and the deltas, and then you've got the epsilons at the bottom. They just do all the drudgery, and everybody's dumbed down with soma, the happiness drug, you know. And this is the society we're living in combination with. And the important thing he said was people will actually love their state of slavery, and they do. And you say to people, "You're a slave." No, I'm not. I said, "You know, debt slavery, mortgages." Oh, no, I'm free to do that. Blah, blah. And, of course, they're not, because they've been trained to be stupid. So they are, because, you know, the school system is gearing everybody to become a little minion of this whole industrial empire, which has been running since, well, the early 1600s, basically. It goes right back to around 1609, when the London Company set out to exploit resources in Virginia. And they hauled off all the
Was the Battle of Waterloo again? When was the Battle of Waterloo?
Waterloo was 1815.
Yeah. Because it occurred to me that that's when this whole industrialization and theft of resources and increase in slavery kind of started to really kick off. Was after the Rothschilds bought the Bank of England, and then they owned England, which owned Europe.
Oh, yeah, well, it was 1694 was the establishment of the fractional reserve banking system. So we've had that scam running since, you know, basically around 1700. But prior to that, this whole thing about going out and colonizing, killing off the natives, stealing the resources, that effectively started with Spain and Portugal and the Dutch, and then, of course, the British got in on the act, and the French. You know, oh, we were wonderful. We took Canada from the French. Aren't we marvellous, you know? Aren't we great people? And, of course, then it was the slaughter of the American Indians, the slaughter of the buffalo, and just constant creation of this whole industrial system. They came to New Zealand in the early 1800s to get whales, because there was a shortage of whale oil. And then, oh, yeah, this is a good place. We can, you know, we can knock over the Maoris and steal this land. No, we can't change history, but we do need to understand how it got there. And I actually cover all of this stuff in that book. So I'll just remind you, that really is important. If you actually want to know what's going on and why we're in this mess, please get a hold of that book. And it's published by Publish Me. And basically just go online, search.
When you say that book, just remember that this is on radio and people can't see what you're showing on the camera.
Okay, it's called The Easy Way. It's written by Kevin Moore, and it's published by Publish Me. And basically, if anybody wants to just log on to an internet site and then just search that title, it is available as an e-book. It costs people $5. Now, I mean, how cheap can it get? but people,
it could be free.
Well, yeah, I have sent it to free to people in the end. But, I mean, it costs a lot of time and energy and money to produce books. And you think, well, I wouldn't mind getting something back.
Well, what's been happening recently is a new form of money sourcing whereby you give out your products for free and then you ask people to donate if they like it, that kind of thing. There was this woman who's a musician, and she raised $1.2 million after getting out her album for free, which is about 12 times what she made as an artist with a record label.
Oh, of course, yes, because it's all about the profit for the record label. Well, actually, well, I mean, I've given this a heavy promotion within my district because, I mean, I'm not being selfish and stupid, but it's what counts in my own district that matters to me. So but I give these people and say, you know, pay me, and sometimes it's bloody hard to extract $20. You think, well, that's nothing. And, you know, but really hard to get money out of people if it's information that they need. No, but they're quite happy to go and spend, you know, $20 on a pizza or watch some crappy movie, you know? It's just people.
Yeah. Well, I see, it's unfortunate, eh? Yeah, I've always been surprised to find out just how much people prioritise making themselves unhealthy and stupid based on the society that we live in. All right. Kevin Moore is my guest. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week. If you're listening in New Zealand, just remember that we are doing the show an hour earlier in the interim, while the time zones do a little bit of a fluctuation. There's kind of like when the seasons change. New Zealand and America have their both different time zone changes. So when America changes, which I just did, we go to 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. local New Zealand time, Monday through Saturday. And then when we here in New Zealand change our time zones, it goes back again to from 10 a.m. till midday would be the new time changes. I think that'll be happening in about a month from now. So thank you for joining in. My very special guest is Kevin Moore, chemist and author and a dude who knows about the climate and what have you. Now, I was wondering what the proposed solutions are, because whenever the New World Order types propose solutions based on climate change, it's simply carbon tax, deindustrialize society, starve people to death, sterilize people, that kind of thing. Are you advocating any of that?
No, the real solutions to this problem are power down and permaculture. Now, both of those solutions are totally unacceptable to moneylenders and corporations. So,
can you define what they are?
Well, power down is using less energy, right? Our current lifestyle is depending where you are, on using energy at 100 times or 1,000 times the rate that we can use energy. So, and this happened because of the industrialization that took place in Britain and then spread around the world from about 1780 onwards. Prior to 1780, people used the amount of energy that landed on their patch over a year delivered by the sun, right? It was basically, that was how much energy they had access to. And that energy was captured by photosynthesis, via plants, leaves, animals, etc. Ate the plants. You could use the animals to plow the field or whatever it was. But it was still the amount of energy that landed on your patch and your area. Well, after you started using coal, well, then you had all this stored energy that nature put there maybe 300 million years ago. Getting that access to that energy meant that people could use more energy every day. And this was going up. And so we had this great growth in energy consumption. And now we're in this situation where people living in Western societies think that's normal. They think that using masses of energy is normal, but it's not. It's a huge aberration. You know, for all of humanity's existence, and let's say go back 2 million years, well, you know, for other than this period of, well, in Britain about 200 years, but in other places which develop later as short as 50 years, people have lived naturally. So, but that, you know, so, but coming back to this whole point, and I'd like to come back to that a little bit later if I can, Vince, because I've got something quite important that I want to show you. Now, there's a candle and there's an iron nail. And being a chemist, I know that I can stick this candle into the iron nail. I can hold that quite close. Now, I don't know if you know where I'm going to get to. I'd like to guess?
I don't know what the hell you're doing. I've never seen people deliberately place a nail into a candle flame before.
No, well, you see, my problem is I'm too smart, right? Now, that is actually starting to get a little bit warm now. You notice how close my fingers are to that, right? It's just iron is a very, very poor conductor of heat. And the melting point of iron is about 1,500 degrees Celsius. That candle flame is burning at about 300. Now, think about 9/11. So we had these very small, short-lived fires in the top of some steel-girded, steel-structured, steel-columned skyscrapers.
That were also covered in fireproof asbestos.
Yes, but they're right. And they fell down after a couple of hours, right? And Building 7, which wasn't even hit by a plane, fell down. I mean, it was obviously a demolition job. I mean, anybody with a brain can see that. It was a demolition job, and I've written about this in my book. And so I'll just put that candle out. Well, you see, most people accept the nonsense which is churned out by governments and corporations. They don't think. And they're not chemists, I don't know. I don't know what the explanation is. But anybody that thinks about that says, well, this whole narrative is a lie. When you look at it, you know, it's impossible. You have planes with titanium steel engines evaporate on contact with grass. Excuse me, you know, melting point of titanium, 1,600 degrees, doesn't vaporize to 3,000 degrees. You're getting halfway to the temperature of the sun to vaporize titanium. And yet this plane comes in, the Shanksville plane, disappears on contact with the ground, the Pentagon plane. Whoops, where did it go? Oh, well, it evaporated. Yeah, well, come on. I mean, well,
actually, the Pentagon plane didn't evaporate. They found the landing gear. They found the engines. They found everything in there. And what's the problem is the 9/11 Truth Movement show you pictures of the Pentagon, and there'll be a hose spraying the fire, and they completely obscure the first level. And then when you have a look at the other pictures where the water's not spraying, the entire first level, there's about 100 meters of full-on wingspan damage through the whole thing. And yet 9/11 truthers will only look at the hole where the central part of the plane went in and say, oh, it couldn't have fit into that tiny hole, while obscuring the rest of the evidence. And I only just found this out a while ago because my friend Ryan Dawson, he showed me the pictures, and it kind of like was like, wow, I had not believed for so long that a plane had gone into the Pentagon until I'd seen the evidence, and now I finally do. It's a big myth that's been perpetrated throughout our movement. It's pretty annoying.
Well, the point about the Pentagon is that there was one hole, right? You've got this twin-engine plane that crashed into it. So, you know, these three-ton engines bounced off the walls without making any holes.
No, you're not listening. The whole bottom floor was taken out. The engines went right into it. So did the wings.
No, not so, Vince. No, if you look at the original footage of the impact with the Pentagon, it was one hole. And the wreckage that was picked up off the ground of the Pentagon.
What original footage? They only released four frames, and they confiscated all the rest of the footage.
No. Yeah, exactly. All that surveillance footage from the car parks and hotels, etc., was confiscated. But there was some original footage which disappeared. But it was actually available for a very short time. And if you see that, there's one hole. And the wreckage was just one engine, very small plane, almost certainly a drone that fired a cruise missile. In other words, it's a false flag. But coming back to what I was talking about, Aldous Huxley, now the other great writer was George Orwell, and he wrote 1984. So in 1947, he was onto this whole thing of war is peace, ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery. And this was, you know, again, these very, very perceptive, prescient people, decades and decades ago. And we now live in an Orwellian society where whatever the government says, basically, then it's the opposite of what the government tells you. Does that make sense? So, I mean, everything's Orwellian. So we keep on about, economic growth, GDP. We're all going to get richer, you know, better, brighter future, you name it, any kind of nonsense. Just to keep the proles believing in this whole toxic system. So, this system, I don't know if you can read it, it can only be maintained by keeping the populace dumbed down. If people actually understand what's going on, so I've written there, the current system, economic political system is founded on lies and can only be maintained by the so-called liars, leaders lying continuously. So, you know, it doesn't matter, John Key, Obama, it doesn't matter, Cameron, anybody in political office, they just lie continuously in order to keep this whole thing going. They're well paid to lie, and that's their job. Their job is to lie to the general populace. And most people are too uninformed or stupid to see the truth. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. You know?
Oh, wow. I've always philosophized that nobody's dumber than somebody who thinks they're bright.
Well, I wrote that book, as I mentioned, Burn Baby Burn, in 2001. The economic system is destroying the habitability of the earth for most humans, and it exterminates other species. This is happening right before our. We're actually in the middle of the sixth great extinction event. And it started off with things like orcs and, you know, various species. I mean, we're almost exterminated. Kiwis, moas were exterminated prior to the Europeans arriving here. And this is what humans do. They come into an area and they basically exterminate anything. And the classic example of this was the Easter Islanders, who landed on Rapa Nui off the coast of Chile, covered with trees. And over a period of centuries, they chopped down the trees. Then they went into their statue building stage, chopped down the last tree, and then starved to death, most of them.
I've got something interesting for you here. Have you seen the excavations of those statues on Easter Island?
Yes. Well, not personally, but I've seen pictures of them, yeah.
So you've seen pictures of them digging down beneath the heads and finding out that there's whole tall statues underneath
them. Indeed, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, how the hell could they roll that thing on? You know, it was nigh on impossible just to get a massive head of that size rolling along logs, as was theorized. And now there's like statues that are like 3-4 times the size that they're supposed to have done. And it's like, we're not being told the truth about history at all anymore, are we? Ancient cultures were. All right, hold on. We'll be right back after the break. Kevin, if you want to talk about this Easter Island thing after the break, it'd be a nice segue. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Moore on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the drought-stricken North Island of New Zealand, which we haven't had for like 60 years or something like that, I believe. Yeah, it's tough being a farmer living off the land when you don't know nothing about how the land actually works because nobody's that smart anymore to live naturally and permaculturally, as it were. All right, Kevin Moore is my guest. Welcome back. Did you want to keep talking about Easter Island for a second or nah?
Just briefly, again, back to this book, The Easy Way. I've written a section about there's a picture of, I don't know if you can get that, but there's a picture of Easter Island, the statues. I do write about that. Roggeveen went there in 1722. And he found the remains of this society, which had collapsed because it had basically destroyed its life support system. And this is where we're headed. We're actually living in an Easter Island culture. And I said that to my local council last time I spoke to them. This is the society that we have. Oh, we just keep building. We just keep borrowing money to build stuff. Now, I mean, they're going to build a new art gallery, a new centre. I mean, it's the same everywhere you look almost, except in parts of the world which have gone bankrupt. They're not building much in Greece or Spain these days, but those parts of the world which are still operating reasonably normally, well, in this abnormal system, are still able to fund ridiculous building projects. So it's an Easter Island culture. We're just going to carry on doing this until we can't, until we starve ourselves to death or the money runs out or the energy runs out. And the reason we're doing this, and this is really important, is the economic model. Now, most people don't understand the money system, whereby money is created out of thin air, doesn't actually exist. Until 1971, there was a link to the gold standard. Well, Nixon basically decoupled gold from the gold standard, and from then, and particularly from the 1990s onward, when Clinton repealed the Steel-Glass Law and basically said, oh, no, yeah, banks can operate as investment. They can do hedge funds. They can do anything, right? And so we end up with this whole Ponzi scheme thing. But when money is created at interest, where does the interest come from? Well, the answer is it's from the money that's already in existence. I detail that, and anybody that's interested can watch Money as Debt or on it. There are lots of great videos on all of this stuff.
But the bottom line is, it's mathematically impossible to pay stuff back with stuff that isn't there.
Absolutely, totally. Yeah, and nobody knows how big this whole derivative market is. I mean, I hear the figure $250 billion now, like $1,000 trillion in derivatives which are floating around the world. And everybody says, oh, but the Dow's reached a new level high. Oh, wonderful. You know, what's backing it? Nothing.
Yeah, like, holy Dow!
Yeah. And these worshippers of the market think that this is marvelous. I mean, this is the biggest bubble in all of history, which is being created. It's just like the tulip bubble of 1637, where the price of tulips went up and up and up because people thought, oh, yeah, you know, this is a great way to speculate. And it's all speculative. But just coming back to the whole basis of this economic model, you have to keep growing. Now, Albert Bartlett did a wonderful presentation called Arithmetic, Population and Energy, many years ago, and it's online. Anybody wants to look that up, it's great. Because if something grows at 7%, then it doubles every 10 years. And we need this economic growth, so we double. And then we double again. So we've got this piece of paper, and we just keep opening it out. Well, you know, this is all very well, just to keep doubling and doubling, and then if I had a bigger piece of paper, it would just sort of double and double and double and keep. But the problem is, whoops, I just dropped it. Here is the Earth. Oh, well, gosh, it's finite. Doesn't get bigger every day. It's the same size as it was 4.5 billion years ago. And so we can't...
How could it possibly be the same size, though? I mean, when photosynthesis happens, energy gets drawn by the sun into a leaf, and then the leaf drops and it builds up and then becomes more soil. So wouldn't the Earth be growing daily because of just plant matter falling to the Earth? Or?
No, actually, it's slightly smaller. No, I mean, the sunlight is not matter. That's energy. The sunlight.
No, I'm saying that leaves turn sunlight.
CO2 in the atmosphere into leaves. Yeah, CO2 from the atmosphere, taken out of the atmosphere and formed into carbohydrates. And then when the leaves rot or get eaten, it goes back to CO2. So this is a natural cycle. So it's CO2 in, CO2 out at the same rate over a long period of time. Hence, we had this level CO2 level for centuries.
How do compost bins work? Because, you put organic matter in there and then you wind up with compost, and that organic matter hasn't really changed a whole lot. It's actually just more matter that's there.
It's been broken down from large molecules into small molecules, basically.
But the point is, those original trees that you've gotten the fruit from are still growing themselves, and they're still producing more fruit, and that fruit grows, right?
Yeah, but by taking CO2 out of the atmosphere, Vince, is taking CO2 out of the air, which is what photosynthesis is, reducing the CO2 level. But
I thought photosynthesis had to do with sunlight, not carbon.
No, the sunlight gives the plant the energy to trap the carbon. Right, it's energy. Without energy, nothing happens. So the sunlight hits the leaf. It activates the chlorophyll in the leaf, and that captures the sunlight. It's a magnesium porphyrin ring. That doesn't mean anything to you being a non-chemist. Traps that energy. The plant uses that energy to capture the CO2 to build up.
Could you explain what that thing was? You said something about a ring of some.
Magnesium is the iron in the middle of a porphyrin ring. It's just the structure, chemical structure.
The chlorophyll porphyrin rings are the same as the red blood cell kind of porphyrin rings, except we've got iron as opposed to magnesium in the middle, and all the elements outside them are the same.
Yeah. And when you've got a metal iron trapped in one of these rings, it's able to capture energy and store it temporarily. So that's how. But these are side issues. I really want to get back onto this economic stuff because that's really important. So we've got this model which requires constant growth. Well, if you haven't got an increasing energy supply, you can't have constant growth. I'm a member of the board of ASPO, the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, and I have been aware for over a decade that we were going to be in trouble in the early years of the 21st century from the point of view of energy. Now, so we're actually in the point now of a declining energy supply. So that means we have to have economic contraction. Now, it hasn't hit New Zealand really badly just yet, but in Greece and Spain, where places where they've got no oil at all, they have to buy oil, where they're creating money via the Ponzi scheme to buy their oil and getting themselves deeper and deeper into debt, and everything's going under. I mean, it's happening in Britain, it's happening in America. America peaked in oil extraction in 1970, and I don't care what anybody says about shale gas, it is not going to solve the energy problem. Now, if we look at this situation globally, we've gone from the early 1900s when we were using bugger all oil, like, half a million barrels a day. The energy shock of the 1970s, and we're now past peak, and energy supply is going down. So this is where the economic system starts to break down. You can't have a growing economy if you've got a declining energy supply. Well, this is peak oil, by the way, and this is a term which some people are familiar with. Well, the peak of extraction, that's sucking oil out of the ground, was between 2005 and 2008. And I warned the local council, I've warned everybody about this, and they say, oh, no, you're too gloomy, that will never happen. Well, it has happened. And this is why the global economic system is now starting to collapse. And the rate of collapse will increase. What's really, really important is the thing called energy return on energy invested. Now, way, way, way back, when Spindletop was drilled back in the early 1900s, you just drilled down a few hundred feet, out came the oil, you spent one unit of energy, and you got back 50 or 100. And as we've progressed along this curve, we're using more and more energy to get back less. And we're now getting to the point of falling off the energy on energy return, invested on energy return curve. We're drilling like 200 kilometers off the coast. We're fracking. We're drilling. These are last desperate attempts to keep this system going. It's quite scary if you actually know what's going on. All the cheap oil has been gone years ago. Coal, same thing. All the high-quality coal has been burnt.
I thought fracking is what happened on the land, and they do drilling off the land on the sea and stuff.
Yeah, no, I just said these are two examples of the desperation to keep this thing going. We wouldn't be drilling 200 kilometres off the coast of Taranaki if there was plenty of oil. We wouldn't be fracking, which is drilling, fracturing the rocks to get out the last pockets of oil and gas if there was plenty of oil. So these people say, oh, no, don't worry about it, there's loads of oil. It's the big lie. Again, it's all about keeping up confidence because this whole economic system requires confidence. So we are actually on a path that takes us to economic collapse, environmental collapse, mass starvation, and extinction of most mammals on this planet if we keep going the way we do. That's the reality which people do not want to face. It's too scary.
Now, I saw a textbook that was made in the 70s that said peak oil would mean we would run out of oil by 1994.
No, never. No, you see, that's a misunderstanding of peak oil. Peak oil is not running out of oil. We will never run out of oil. It's the maximum extraction, how quickly you can pump it out the ground. So that was increasing over a period of time.
You believe oil to be a fossil fuel, right?
Well, it is. It's not I believe. It is. It is a fossil fuel.
Okay. So how could something be a finite resource that is unlimited, as you're saying now?
No, I didn't say it's unlimited.
You said we'll never run out of oil.
Yes, because we won't be able to extract the oil that's in the ground.
But that's running out of oil, isn't it?
But running out means that something's gone, right? No, we're not going to run out. What we will be, we'd be unable to get it out the ground. See, what happens with an oil well, you start sucking out, and it's easy to get out at first, and then it gets harder and harder. After a while, instead of it spurting out under natural pressure, you have to install a pump, and then you're pumping away. You've seen these rockers, you know, they're very emblematic of Texas. You know, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all these old places where they were sucking oil. It goes right back to Titusville, 1859, where Colonel Drake just drilled down with some water boring equipment. And I've forgotten the exact depth. It wasn't very much. It was less than 100 feet, right, 30 meters. And there was the oil. Well, nowadays, you think about Deepwater Horizon. They were drilling in 1,500 meters of water, and they drilled down about another 5 kilometers to get to this pocket of oil. The energy required to do that is massive, and then they lost control of it. Difficult. So you get to the point where there is oil still there.
Hold on. That's a complete fabrication. There are two types of oil drilling, and what they were practicing in the Deepwater Horizon was a Russian pioneered form of oil drilling called deep core drilling, where you get down to the 60,000 foot mark, and they found that the oil reserves are much, much larger than the surface bubbles of oil, to the point where many people who've seen these reserves say that they are oceans of oil deep beneath the Earth's surface.
Yeah, Vince, that's the big lie that they want you to believe. Now, the reality was, the reason that blew was the pressure, because as you go down, every 10 meters you go down, that's one atmosphere of pressure, and they lost control of it. The pressure was too great. for them to bought to get it. And there's no oceans of oil down there. That's a huge lie. This whole thing about abiotic oil is just complete nonsense. It breaks the laws of chemistry. But they want you to believe this. They want you to believe there's plenty of oil. Otherwise, you're going to say, oh, I'm not going to run my car anymore. I'm not going to do this. Everything is to keep you deluded and believing in the system. And that's just another example of the same thing.
Well, hold on. The oil industry has been saying that oil is a very scarce resource, and they've been promoting the peak oil thing as well.
Rockefeller
Oil has been shutting down refineries and buying out their competition all the time in order to make a bottleneck on production so that they can put the petrol prices up.
Now, that's a big myth. The reality is geology. I mean, it's like you go and buy a bottle of beer, right, and you drink it. Well, halfway through, it's half gone. That's it. Sorry. You know, the bottle doesn't keep refilling. And it's the same with the earth. These oil reserves were produced between 90 and 140 million years ago. It's finite.
How have they been able to say it's between 90 and some odd million years ago? Carbon dating only goes to 50,000 years max.
No, carbon dating only goes back 5,000 years.
Back 50,000.
No, 5,000. Beyond 5,000, it gets unreliable. But you go to argon, potassium dating, whatever. I mean, uranium. There's all kinds of other radioactive isotopes going back, 4.5 billion years. You can age the rocks, and this is what geologists do. And they say, oh, yeah, no, these rocks are of this age, blah, blah. There are likely to be oil reserves here. We can't be sure, but it looks like a good place to drill, which is what they did. Well, in the past, it was very easy. Masses of oil all over the place. I mean, as I said, Colonel Drake, you just drilled down a few feet with some water boring equipment and you found oil. But United States oil extraction peaked in 1917. It's in decline ever since. That's a fact.
That was during the oil price shock, wasn't it? Oil prices suddenly went up hugely during the 70s.
Yeah, but that was because of political embargo by the Arab nations, who were really pissed off at Western support for Israel. So they said, right, we're not going to supply you with oil, and that pushed the price up. Now, one thing that kept this thing going was the discovery of oil in the North Sea and Alaska. So Britain was able to keep its Ponzi scheme going for a bit longer by sucking North Sea oil out. Well, that's now mostly gone. Britain peaked in its extraction about 2000. And if you look at the data, they're falling off the cliff. Alaska peaked quite some time ago. There is no more easy oil. That's the reality which people refuse to accept. They refuse to accept that all the easy oil is gone. They say, no, there must be more oil because their lives are dependent on it. Well, wishful thinking is not going to change reality, I can tell you. I mean, I've studied geology. I'm a member, as I said, of the ASPO Executive Board for New Zealand. I know this stuff. So this is no myths or fabrications here.
You do realize appeal to authority is a logical fallacy, right?
Look, the Earth doesn't give a shit about humans, right? I'm giving you the facts.
We can't swear under FCC regulations, unfortunately. and we're coming to a break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. Hey, this is a good way to go on the break. The Earth doesn't give a frack about humans. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, you do realize cancer can grow infinitely if it didn't kill its host. Isn't that interesting? Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with my very special guest, Kevin Moore. Now, it occurs to me that you've got a massive presentation that is planned for this interview, and it prohibits really the possibility of having a conversation at the same time that you want to present and finish your planned degree. So why don't you go ahead and try and sum it up? Are there many more pages left on that little...
No, there's only two more, actually. Only two more pages, Vince. This is the next one. almost everything that central government and local government does makes everything that matters worse. All right? Because they're basically there to keep this Ponzi scheme going. And I mean, you know, so you've got all these local authorities. It's pretty much the same everywhere in the world. They're all borrowing money, you know, at interest from moneylenders. And it's all about building stuff and blah, 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 and so-called development, you know, whether it's a casino or artworks or blah, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And basically gobbling up finite fossil resource and converting them to CO2. So we said, well, why is this happening? And we really need to understand the structure of society in order to understand why this is happening. So I put this is the last page of actually stuff that I've done. The structure of society is we've got the global elites. Then you've got your corporations and money lenders. Then you've got governments. Then you've got your enforcers or opportunists. And then right at the bottom of the heap, you've got your ordinary people. So I kind of thought you got that. Now
hold it up a little bit higher.
Yeah. So your power goes downwards from your global elites through the corporations, through the governments, and then you've got the people that are enforcing all this stuff, and plus the opportunists that take advantage of this situation, and at the bottom, and then wealth transfers upwards. Now, I said everything is Orwellian. You see, so we have this trickle-down theory that if we give tax breaks to rich people, then the money is going to flow down to the bottom. Well, I mean, the system has never been that way and it never will be, because the whole purpose of this whole system is to transfer wealth upwards from ordinary people to the global elites. And we're seeing this now in the last stages of the kind of a loot-the-till economy, where you've got all these CEOs that get $1 million bonus or $2 million, you know, it just goes on and on and on. No accountability anywhere in the system because the government's regulators are not regulating. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a Security Exchange Commission or Department of Agriculture or you name it. Every one of these, they're all basically bought and paid for by the global corporations and the moneylenders to ensure that this whole loot and pollute economy can keep going. But it won't anyway, because we're buggering up the environment and we're running out of resources. I mean, a good example of this would be gold. Now, if you were lucky enough to have come to New Zealand in the mid-1800s, you could have gone down to Otago, rummaged around and found a few lumps of gold and got rich. It was all good. Wait, you try and find lumps of gold in Otago now. There aren't any. You know, same with...
A mate of mine who lives on the west coast of the South Island, every now and again, when he's short of cash, he goes to a river near where he is and panhandles for a bit and finds a few flecks, and then he goes and pays his rent with them.
That's right, yeah. And this is what's really interesting. If you look at the price of gold, you know, about 1930 or so, the price of gold was about $30 an ounce. And then... I don't know if you're aware of the Great Depression that followed on from the Wall Street crash in 1929. So the US government said, oh, wow, look, things are really bad. We want you to give us your gold, right? And we'll give you $30 an ounce for your gold. So all these people handed in their gold, got their $30. Following week, the US government said, oh, right, well, we'll revalue gold now at $35 an ounce. I mean, this is exactly what happened. This is exactly what governments do. They continually scam the people. Well, look at the price of gold now. It's currently about $1,580. So you go from $30 to, you know, $1,580. Well, we're talking about, you know, massively.
Have you noticed that it's impossible to scam people if they don't trust you?
Yeah, but people are trusting. This is the whole point.
Exactly.
Oh, it's government. It must be right. Oh, it's official. Oh, it must be right. I better buy this T-shirt because it's the official rugby T-shirt. I better drink this beer because it's the official beer that I've got to drink if I'm going to go to this World Cup event. I mean, sorry, but people are basically stupid. It's sad, but that's the way they are. They've been trained to be stupid, so they are. And you try and get them to think outside the box. Oh, no, 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 you can't do that, you know? It's just the nature
of
people.
They have to have their head cracked open by a baton of some kind before it knocks them out of their trust in government. I mean, that's what happened to me. I used to be a massive believer in all of this stuff. And then through being arrested and then having the cops make fun of you while they're arresting you and calling your names and stuff like that, and then making up evidence delivering it to the court as though it's real and stuff. You know, like, I think everybody should have that really harrowing, horrible life-destroying experience, because it turns you into an awake person who knows that if you have a uniform on, means you probably can't be trusted.
You're not saying that police lie in court, are you?
They constantly lie in court.
And the judges make misjudgments? No, that could never happen in our society. Yeah. I mean, that's the point. The police are there to enforce this whole... It's an imperialist system. That's their job, right? So, you know, if they're required to lie, they lie.
The laws that are being passed aren't even laws. They're statutes, which means they're lies to begin with. How exactly do you enforce something that's a lie without being a chronic liar?
Well, it's very, very easy. And I'll tell you how they do it. You see, now we here have a thing called the Midweek, which is a free newspaper. It gets posted every week into your mailbox, and there's the council's 7 days report telling us what a wonderful job they're doing, how absolutely fabulous everything is, and it's all going to get better because of what they're doing. Well, people believe this.
See, I want to have a front page story. Fox claims he's doing a good job guarding the hen house.
Vince,
egg on his face and everything, you know.
I have seen so many DVDs and documentaries. I mean, I sound like an elitist, you know it all, if you like, but I've actually studied all this stuff for over a decade, and I do know. I mean, going back to this oil situation, now, Colin Campbell and Jean Lahaire wrote an article for Scientific American in 1998, The End of Cheap Oil. They were oil geologists. They worked for Total, and I think Colin Campbell worked for Shell at one stage, just the same as M. King Hubbard. These are insiders. They study the stuff. They know what's going on. They raise the alarm, and everybody says, oh, no, that will never happen. No, that's just a conspiracy. Well, the conspiracy, of course, is central government. This is the whole point. It's this whole keep everybody dumbed down, this whole Orwellian situation where people believe in complete nonsense. Oh, I'll go and vote National because they're going to give us a better, brighter future.
Yeah, see, that's why I had made a different National banner, and it says irrational as opposed to National. And that's basically what the system has really turned into, is it's made people so freaking gullible and in plain denial of reality that even when it hits them over the head, they still refuse to believe it.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I've actually pulled back from activism. I spend a lot of time and energy. I stood for Parliament for the Direct Democracy Party, did all this stuff. I've stood for local elections. People don't want to know. They don't get it. So I'm basically now doing my own preparations and coming back to this whole thing about food. If you haven't got clean water to drink and you haven't got food, well, you're pretty much gone in a week. That's it. And that's exactly where we are headed. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, how many jet skis you've got or whatever else, that you can't eat the jet ski. And coming back to the gold thing, now a lot of people say, yeah, well, buy gold. There is a protection against the collapse of fiat currencies. I don't know if you understand that term, fiat. Fiat means just an ounce, basically. It's declared. And the government says, well, this piece of paper is worth $20. Well, it's just a piece of paper, of course, but it's given value, you know, because people accept it.
See, now, fiat to me literally translates as making shit up.
yeah. But, I mean, this is the system. And this is why the global elites are getting a bit scared of what's happening in places like Greece and Spain, because when you've got 27% general unemployment rate and you've got 60% youth unemployment rate, well, society as it has known is not going to hold together for much longer.
Unemployed people have time to think. Employed people do not.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Keep on the rat race. Keep in that treadmill. Just keep doing the same thing. Don't think for yourself.
I thought about a strange draconian policy of mandatory annual unemployment. Like, for once in your life, you have to be unemployed for an entire year and think about who you are and what you want to do with your life and study things online or whatever. That happened to me, and I wound up becoming a radio show host and a filmmaker and an activist out of it, which I'm still doing today.
Yes. But unfortunately, a sad thing, but most young people are dumbed down by the system. You see them walking along the streets with their cell phones and they're text messaging one another, almost walking into lampposts because they've been caught up. What I call this whole thing is a web of deceit. And most people are trapped in that web of deceit. They are fed nonsense constantly by the mainstream media. In New Zealand, it's TVNZ, TV2, TV3. It's just constant distraction from anything that actually matters.
Did you notice, just recently, Kevin, how our power companies are now up for sale to massive foreign corporates, and the lead headline story is "Man gets eaten by a shark."
Yes, exactly. I turn on my.
And it was a hit story for like 4 days. They come at his funeral and everything.
Yeah, once you understand what the game is, you can see straight through it. But most people don't want to. They want to keep believing in this whole fantasy world that they're going to get richer for doing nothing, basically. And it's not going to happen. I'm actually very lucky because at the moment, where I'm living, if I turn a switch, the light comes on. If I turn a tap, water comes out. If I turn another tap, hot water comes up. This is actually a life of great luxury compared to about 4 billion people who are living on this planet. And the only reason I can have these great luxuries is because we are stealing from the rest of the world. That's the reality of it. And this is particularly true of America. The whole American empire is based on theft of resources and financial scams. The same for Britain. You know, this great empire. Well, the reason that Britain got rich was they went off to India and they looted the place.
That's how the Roman Empire got rich as well. Every new country they invaded and conquered, they would steal all the gold, steal all the silver, yep. steal all the resources and the best land and things like that. And the reason the empire collapsed is because there was nothing left to steal. They were trying to maintain all the stuff that they'd stolen, and they couldn't because they weren't able to steal anything more. They'd already taken it all.
it is a brilliant system where you have an army that steals gold, and you use the gold that you've just stolen to pay the army. Basically, it's a brilliant system, but it only works as long as there's gold.
Isn't that called free enterprise?
Well, as I said before, we actually have a loot and pollute system. So, and this is basically promoted by governments, local government, with the mayors and CEOs and all. And they say, oh, this is wonderful, Be part of this thing and this, it's sale of assets. Oh, you can be part of this loot and pollute economy. But it's a huge scam and it's going to fall over. I mean, really interesting. We're talking about a power company which is dependent on good rainfall. Now, very interesting. I made the comment.
You're going to sell it in the middle of a drought.
I cannot predict, what the rainfall is going to be later this year or whatever, but everything that I read says we're headed for greater instability. Torrents of rain when you don't need it, and then extended droughts when you do need it. So this is fascinating. As I said, right at the beginning, this whole system is not only destroying the Earth, but it's also destroying itself. The system cannot function if you just keep printing money and then, quantitative easing, quantitative 1, 2, 3, 4... just keep on pouring money. And in America, I think it's about $3 billion a day that the Fed is pouring into the economy just to maintain status quo.
It's $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities, and they have decided that they will do that till the end of the foreseeable human existence.
Yes.
There's these people freaking retarded. It's like, let's try QE1. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try QE2. It's like I'm trying to cure myself of AIDS or something by cutting my left leg off, and that doesn't work. So I go, all right, let's cut off the right leg. Okay, that didn't work. Let's cut off my left arm. That didn't work. Okay, let's see if I can cut off my right arm with my one remaining right arm. There'll be nothing left to cut off.
That's one of the analogy I used to use was the doctors who were treating somebody with a poor blood supply, so they'd apply leeches, right? Oh, it's not working. Apply more leeches. And this is the society we live in.
Yeah, and the person bleeds to death from the leeches on their neck. Kind of like society, except those leeches are called politicians. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com if we don't bleed out. Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah,
but I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
I'm the dude you really know. Flow like this, like this, like this. Let's do it.
How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any. Not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
Welcome back.
I don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. How many dudes you know can actually host a show like this? You know, I don't think there's that many. Least of all from New Zealand, which is quite sad, really, at the end of the day, because this kind of talk, we may all disagree with each other from time to time on broadcasts or whatever, but let's face facts here. None of us who are speaking on these types of radio shows or are hosting them are members of the New World Order elite, okay? I mean, Do you see a $1 billion worth of platinum rings or something adorning my fingers? No, it's just not the case. We're all really under the boot heel of these scumbags. And what you were talking about earlier, Kevin, was about the power and wealth scale, you know, like the New World Order at the top, they got all the power and wealth, and the people down the bottom, we've got no power, no wealth. And that's called despotism. The inequality of power and authority and wealth is actually really the indicator for how you know you're actually living under despotism. And I don't think that anybody could really argue that point.
You want me to respond to that? We actually live in a covert fascist state, Vince, as you probably know. The word covert meaning hidden, you know. And I think we're headed for an overt fascist state. I've studied history amongst many other things that I've studied, and I've become very much interested in the First World War. And if you look at what happened there, you know, the British Army said, right, well, we're just do a bit of a barrage, and then we're sending the troops run towards that machine gun, you know, 58,000 casualties in 1 week, you know, Battle of Passchendaele and this sort of thing, Battle of Verdun, 700,000 French casualties and a similar number of German casualties over a period of about 3 months. And in the end, these guys said, well, we're not lambs going to the slaughter, we're people. Well, of course, they rounded up the ringleaders, charged them with mutiny, sent them to a firing squad. The very first Christmas in that First World War, the Germans approached the British lines carrying trees with candles on them. And the British said, what the hell is going on? They're a bit wary at first. Oh, this is some trigger trap. And they were singing Christmas carols. And in the end, they had this football match. But of course, the generals said immediately afterwards, you know, we can't allow this kind of behavior. Anybody that does anything like that again will be shot, will be court-martialed. And it's the same thing now. Anybody who tells the truth, anybody who shows any kind of compassion, caring for society, you are an outcast, basically, because it's a whole corporate fascist society. And fascism is this melding of corporations, moneylenders, military and government all melded together. That's what fascism is, and that's how Mussolini defined it, corporatism.
That's one of the really sad realities for me, and it actually moves me quite a bit, is that I see these politicians like the Prime Minister John Key, who was the head of the European Bond and Derivatives Trade for 2 years on the board of the Federal Reserve in New York, you know, as Merrill Lynch's representative. And I see him saying that he's going to help the economy and he's going to improve New Zealanders' lives and make a better country. And it breaks my heart to see people believe it.
Well, as I said, unfortunately, most people are scientifically illiterate and they're financially illiterate and they believe this garbage. They think, oh, well, if he's got experience in overseas, you know, currency trading, then he must be a good guy and he must know what he's doing. And this is and unfortunately, you can't correct this generational thing because it's been going on for decades. You can't just suddenly make people aware and awake. You know, we do our best and we might reach 0.1%, 0.2% of the populace, but the vast majority of them are not going to listen to this interview. They're not going to read my book. They're not going to go onto the internet and look at Nature Bats Last, for instance, is a very good website discussing all of these major issues. Well, most people won't bother to do it. Because they say, oh, why would I bother to do that? Everything's fine. Yeah, we've got this great leader who's leading us straight off the cliff, as it happens. See, one thing I'm very interested in is how between 6 and 20 million Jews, nobody knows the exact number, died in concentration camps at the hands of fascists. And this started off as just an incremental thing. You know, the Nazi party took over and everybody thought, oh, yeah, they're wonderful. They're stimulating the economy. And then it was persecution of Jews and gypsies, and they have to walk in the gutter and they have to wear an armband. Then they have to go and live in a ghetto. And we says, all right, yes, okay, well, we'll wear the armband, yes, we'll go and live in the ghetto. We have to get onto this train because it's a resettlement program. You know, they're looking after us, these wonderful people.
They're removing us from our homes and taking us somewhere we can be safe as opposed to our own private residences, which we own.
And I make the comment, again, I refer to this book the easy way because I comment on this, that most of those Jews didn't really understand their predicament until they were in the gas chamber, which was supposedly a shower room. It was when the gas canister dropped that they actually realized what their predicament was, you know, and they had about between 30 seconds and 5 minutes to live at that stage. And this is the bulk of society. They go around with their ears and, you know, plugged up, their eyes covered, basically stumbling along. Not knowing where they're going or why they're doing it, and not prepared to examine any of the issues.
You know, I blame forced public education for this. It forces people to go away from their parents who might be able to think independently and maybe raise the children on their own, and instead puts them into government indoctrination camps. That's what schools are as far as I'm concerned.
The comment about schools is they basically are designed to give the pupils enough skills and knowledge for them to be useful to the empire, but to deny them the knowledge that would make them dangerous to the empire. That's the whole purpose of any of this formal education.
So they know everything there is to know about being a slave, but they know bugger all about how to be free.
So I was never taught the money system because this is a taboo subject. You know, this whole idea of basically it's usury, creating money out of thin air, charging interest. I was never taught that at school. I found out much, much later in life how this whole scam works.
You know, had they taught the Bible at school, you would have been taught that, wouldn't you?
Well, the interesting thing, of course, is that was regarded as usury in the medieval period. Basically, a lot of this started, I think, with King Henry VIII, with the moneylender thing, and overturning the usury laws, and then after that, it was basically open slather for the moneylenders. To screw people. You think of Shakespeare and the story of The Merchant of Venice, you know, Shylock and his pound of flesh. And it's all there. Everything that we need to know, the geology, the oil depletion, all of this stuff about atmospherics, It's all been there for decades. In fact, Tyndall worked out that carbon dioxide absorbs CO in the infrared radiation in 1859, you know, a century and a half ago, and re-radiates it and causes heating. Arrhenius, the Swedish chemist, worked out that we were in for a global warming problem in 1896. So this whole thing is about just feeding the general populace the bits of information that they want you to have and denying you the real information that's important. Scary. Mm. Really is scary. This lack of knowledge, lack of information flow. But you understand why, because the people that are running the system, it's for their benefit. It's not for our benefit. And it's been the case, you know, for centuries.
And as you said, the solution to all of this is everybody's got to start using less energy and start more permaculture. Just making sure that you've got, if you've got plants that you're planting and they work together in a symbiotic relationship in a field of green, as it were. And it, like, the real problem with farming now, and particularly agricultural practice, which interestingly enough is the reason why human population has been able to flourish the way it has in the 20th century, is actually because of this this single crop farming practice, which depletes all all the nutrients out of the soil, and therefore, if there's no nutrients in the soil, how many nutrients are you going to be in your food? So there we have our obesity crisis. We've got our immune systems are weak as anything that you could ever conceive of. It's just a bad frickin' idea. So we've got permaculture there. That's a good idea in terms of reducing our energy use. You know, I'm in favor of getting a lot of these patents, which have been classified under national security, released to the public in terms of energy creation devices that have been made over the years and classified, because they really threaten the oil cartel's hold on, you know, global energy production. You know what I'm saying? Do you agree to that, or do you?
Yes, there were actually electric cars that were produced for a short period in America, and then they were killed off. Now, I mean, I'm not a great fan of electric cars, but they were better than, you know, gas-guzzling SUVs, etc. And the oil companies just killed them off because they did not want competition.
Yeah.
And this is the world we live in. People in power who say, right, we'll kill off the competition, we'll kill off the truth, we'll kill off everything. And they're going to kill the people eventually.
Mm. You know, and sooner or later, somebody's going to say, you know what, I've had enough, and then try and kill the oil company executives and try and kill the politicians. And then the politicians will just retaliate and they'll start killing everybody, you know? It's like, I don't see a positive way out of this unless it is a slow transition to a better world through education and through, by education, I mean truth! Freaking getting out there, you know, and it's just so rare. But yeah,
the scary thing is, Vince, that these people with the vested interests.
We've only got 5 seconds. It's too late, Kevin. All right.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks, mate.